Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Pod of Rock, eurem Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Wir drehen den Verstärker für euch auf 11 und zwar jede Woche. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit einer neuen Episode Pod of Rock und eurem Host Josef Lex.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen. Ich bin's mal wieder, euer Lieblings-Josef, und ich habe heute einen Musiker aus einer Band bei mir, die mich schon seit sehr, sehr langer Zeit begleitet, und ich bin auch tatsächlich ein bisschen nervös. Ich hoffe, die Nervosität lässt im Laufe des Interviews ab. Die Band steht gerade in den Startlöchern mit einem neuen sensationellen Album. Die ersten beiden Tracks davon haben wir alle schon wahrscheinlich gehört. Es ist ein Album, das sich um den Tod dreht, und es ist ein Konzeptalbum. Und dieses Album ist wahrscheinlich ein wenig tiefer, als wir es alle erwarten werden. Ich freue mich auf jeden Fall, heute mal darüber zu sprechen mit dem zauberhaften Frederik von der Band Opeth. Hello, Frederik.
Hello, guten Tag. How are you?
Guten Tag. I'm fine. I'm a little bit nervous having you on the show because Opeth is a band that is following me around through my life for a very substantial time.
I'll be as kind as I can be.
That is very lovely of you. You are releasing a new album on the 22nd of November, I believe, called The Last Will and Testament. I read the news.
Yeah, that's correct. We're doing a lot of promo for it right now. We've been on press trips in Germany, England and France so far. And we're doing a lot of interviews from our homes as well. Now I'm home in Stockholm in Sweden, yeah.
The album has a greater concept to it. It's called the Last Will and Testament. And could you tell me a little bit about the fundamental idea that is fueling the album?
Well, it's about these patriarch's children, what they're gonna inherit. So basically, the album takes off when the patriarch, the father, conservative guy, this takes place in the 1920s after World War I. And he's a bit of a narcissist and extremely wealthy. And he dies and starts off with all the paragraphs are paragraphs in the will and testament. But there are also lots of things that gets revealed within the testament that his children are not aware of. So there's a lot of side stories and twists and turns. But I don't want to spoil anything. I think it's better for those who are interested to read the lyrics like I did when I was a kid listening to Iron Maiden. I'd like to read the lyrics, and it helped me learn a lot of English, actually. But so you can dig into the story deeper. But the concept was there from the beginning when the music was in the starting writing process of the songs. But the story was kind of morphing all along, side by side with creating the new song. So I think the story was kind of crystallized and done just a week before we entered the studio. But the basic idea was there from the start that we're going to do this concept album. Slightly inspired by the TV series Succession, I know Michael mentioned. There's a lot of arguments and stuff within a testament and will. That's when sometimes blood is not thicker than water because greed will take a place and all that stuff.
Within the two tracks, everybody already could hear paragraph one and paragraph three. I felt a very intense disdain from the father character to his to the people he left behind in the world. during the writing process, how hard is it to build up the emotion of disdain of a third person has over their left family? How hard is that to build into a musical idea and not just a lyrical one? Because the anger and disdain always flows with the music very well in those two tracks. How did you do that? How did you manage that process?
Well, I think one of the foundations to make this character pop out more was that you have Michael's growl vocals, which is one voice from the father. You have Ian Anderson, who is guesting on the album, which is also narrations of the father. And Michael's clean vocals, like all the voices are different voices from this patriarch, mean old guy. That kind of helped, I think. But when I listen to it, when I'm digging into the songs, I don't think so much about the lyrics. Actually, it's secondary. I'm more into the riffs and solos and stuff like that. So when I create a solo, I don't really think about the concept. I'm just trying to get something that hopefully enhances the song, and like a little tiny composition within the song. Just try to do something I haven't done before, basically, all the time. But, I mean, it was, of course, inspiring for everyone to know that we're going to do a concept album. And that hasn't been done with Opeth since. Well, the Ghost Reveries was an attempt to do a concept album, but it really didn't really come through. But I think Still Life was the last concept album Opeth did. So, but this time the story is stronger, I think, and it has more foundation, more depth to it.
It also tries to communicate a very human kind of story, something that can happen to each and every one of us, losing a person and being subjugated to the wrath of that person.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that some people might be able to relate to in that way. Even though it takes more darker turns and some stuff is more exaggerated, but it's not like there's a lot of super, it's not like supernatural things or stuff like that in the story, in a way. But there are some twists and turns, like the last track on the album makes the entire story take a new turn. But I guess you should find about that on your own when you read the lyrics and get the entire concept. Hopefully people will listen to it from the beginning to the end and read the lyrics first before they start listening to one song here and there.
What I always dreamed of is listening to a concept album live. Will you play the album during your upcoming tours, like in its entirety? Is that planned, or do those two concepts differ too much from each other, the studio band and the live band?
Yeah, I think so, because live, we're entertainers after all, and we've done those kind of shows. We played the entire Ghost Reveries album, we played the entire Blackwater Park, and so on. But I think with this album, you know, there's a lot of songs that have massive string orchestra, so for us to recreate that live, we would need to do it a bit more bombastic with a string orchestra, for instance, and we can't bring that on the road. It would be impossible. So if we would play the album in its entirety, it would be a special event thing. But for now, we're looking at rehearsing five tracks, and since the songs are slightly shorter, we could at least hopefully be able to squeeze in four of the new tracks, which is half of the album. But I don't think we will try to do a story like Queenstrike did, Operation Mindcrime. We won't take it that far. We're going to mix it up with old stuff as well. So we're in the bottom end when it comes to the live show. We're entertainers also. And a lot of the fans want to hear old stuff as well. You know? So we have to balance it out, you know. But with that said, it's going to be exciting to play the new songs live because they're challenging, and I think they will blend up great with the older stuff.
If the album would have been produced in another medium, not an album, which medium would you wish it to be produced in? Wish it would be produced
in? A movie would be cool. Is that what you mean?
Or yeah.
Maybe I miss, yeah.
Yeah. Who would play the protagonists within that movie? You can even dead actors can be resurrected from the dead for this specific movie.
Perhaps, you know, the guy in Harry Potter, the first Professor Dumbledore, that passed away. He's great, you know. He's also in Gladiator. He's the emperor. I can't remember his name. But yeah, there's a lot of cool actors you can do that with. Oh, I know the perfect one actually. The guy who plays Sauron. I missed his name now.
Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee. Mm-hmm. That's the guy.
For some reason, Christopher Lee pops up regularly within my podcast episodes by being mentioned. Did you know that Christopher Lee has a Christmas heavy metal album?
Yeah, I do. And he also did some work with Manowar.
And Rhapsody of Fire, I believe.
Rhapsody of Fire or Rhapsody.
I would need to Google that
specifically because very talented and very multifaceted guy. I believe that listening to the first two songs that are already released from the album, I can definitely picture Christopher Lee doing his.
Yeah, it has to be a English old man because it takes place in the UK. This kind of old farm kind of thing. Or all the mansion, you know. So has to have somebody with a broad accent. That's why Ian Anderson is perfect on the album, you know. I guess he could play the character also, you know, if he would get into acting, because he has that great voice. That's why he works out great on the album. Luckily enough, he plays a bit of flute on the album, which was not planned, really. There was Ian Anderson himself who, do you guys need a flute solo? And yes, please, we do. So luckily there was a spot in paragraph 4 that suited Ian's playing right before I do a guitar solo. So that was, of course, amazing to play a solo after him. I didn't know that at the time when I did the solo, actually, but
I have to. There is an interview hanging around the internet with Michael, and he talks about having Ian wishing that Ian Anderson would at one point in time would pop up on an Opeth album, which is kind of funny that it happened after all those years.
I mean, I had to pinch my arm when I found out because match for this concept idea. It gives it so much more depth to have him do the narrations. And I mean, he's such an amazing musician. We saw him play live last weekend in Stockholm, and I mean, the way he plays flute is so original. His improvisations are mind-blowing, really.
It's a real, real amazing thing that happened to you guys having him on the record, since I believe multiple band members are big fans of I'm struggling to pronounce the band name Jethrotull. I never managed to say that band name correctly. I also looked at the album cover and at the album art, and this one was like a real mind bender for me, because the artwork had a very dreamlike quality to it. Can you tell me a bit about the concept and how the album cover came together? Because all the faces are distorted on that cover, and also in the additional album covers that are within the music videos.
Yeah, I mean, the actual cover is supposed to be the banquet where everybody gathers after his death, I believe. Like, mm-hmm. all these people are there for this banquet. And later on, the children of the father will go into the room with their advocates and get this will read for them. But also, if you look closely at the picture, you can find all the band members in Opeth in there. So that's maybe you didn't know.
I did not know that. It's like, where is Waldo, but with Opeth?
Yeah. Well, first, I thought about, oh, it's going to be a bit like Sgt. Pepper with Beatles. But then Mike said, no, it's more inspired by The Shining, the movie The Shining at the end, when Jack Nicholson stands with all these ghosts.
In the picture frame where it's zooming out and you see all the characters within the movie.
Oh, yes. That was
okay.
But also we like to do a little funny thing, because if you look at the cover from our last album, In Cauda Venenum, there's a boy, pissing boy in the fountain outside the house. And that boy's face is our manager's face. And in this new cover of Last Will and Testament, his face is in there as well, but he's like an old lady with an old lady's hat. But I mean, most people don't recognize his face, but for us, those kind of little things is funny.
It is very funny.
He's also like in Heritage cover, you see the devil beneath the tree.
Yes,
that's kind of his face also.
Oh, that's all the same faces. Oh, I love that.
See if you can find the lady with the hat with his face. Andy is his name, and he loves this stuff. By the way, we're not bullying him or anything, but in a way we do. But he kind of likes it.
I think that's the stuff that really welds together a band with their associates, with the people that surround them. I think that's so beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
that one caught me off guard. Getting back on track. Let's check. Okay. Usually at the end of my interview sections, I like to ask my guests if there is anything that they always wanted to talk about within an interview but never had the chance to.
Whoa, what can that be? You caught me off guard now. Maybe guitars. That's interesting.
If you're into guitars, I'm a bit of a guitar nerd. I don't know if you can see it, but in the background there,
some in the back there. Yeah.
I personally collect weird and stupid guitars. I prefer guitars that do not make sense. My favorite piece in my collection is a 2001 Reverend Rocco guitar. Those were cheap ass plastic guitars that were produced by the company Reverend, which were amazingly good sounding for some fucking reason, and it looks extremely stupid. I will show that thing to you. Just give me a second, and then I will ask you about your guitar collection and about your guitar playing, because that's the kind of thing we do here.
Ah,
this part is plastic. This part is plastic. This is brushed aluminium, and those are two very weirdly positioned and also like twisted guitar pickups. Usually polarization goes like the other way, like both go outside, but this one's inverted and internally it's soldered, so it's not polarity switched anymore.
All right, how does that sound? Yeah, what's the sound like when you do that?
It sounds like regular humbucker pickup, but it's stupid because it's twisted around. Nothing about the design of that guitar makes any sense, but it works.
That's great. Well, you know, we used to, both me and Michael play the PRS guitars, which they've been super kind to us, and they're very reliable guitars on the tour. They can stand it. Heavy touring, where it's trustworthy. But in the studio, we used them as well. Like on the new album, for the leads, I used one with a Floyd Rose, actually, for some solos that wanted that kind of stuff. Meows and elephants. But apart from that, we used on the album, I used a Fender Strat from 1970. For the rhythms, nice. And Michael used the Tele for the rhythms. And then I had an old Junior Les Paul from 55 with a P90 in it that sounds super aggressive, and an SG from 72. We had some other Strat in as well. We had a PRS Mark Tremonti model with the Samuel Duncan Frankenstein pickups in it, Samuel Duncan Custom Shop. But I also have some weird guitar. I can show you one.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the wall. It's a guy in Sweden who built it. It's called Yggdrasil. See, can you see it?
Yes, I can see it very blurry. I believe it's decorated very beautifully.
It's sanded, like the finish. And the actual pick guard here is made by a blacksmith. Hand hammered. Yeah, that's... it's called Yggdrasil after the Norse mythology tree. So this guy in Sweden did it for me. A guy called Michael at Manic Guitars. He made guitars for John Norum as well and some other guys. And yeah, he's great. So that was a fun project. And the neck wood is super old. He found it in an attic, and they had wormholes in it.
How do you fix wormholes in a guitar neck?
You see tiny, tiny black dots, and he said that was no problem, but it's super old. So that was a very different project. But apart from that, I mean, like we stick to the PRS guitars because we also use the piezo pickups. So we always have two outlets from the guitar, two separate chains running. So we need to have double belt packs, which is even heavier. But it works great. You know, we're coming from a heavy riff into a finger-picking style riff. We have to be like that. Usually we used to have just electric clean tone, but now we can... I like to combine the piezo sound with a clean sound sometimes. Mm-hmm. And for some songs, like in Grand Conjuration, there is a section where it's distorted tone and acoustic. So I can program my setup like... And people go, where's the acoustic player? So the riff is overdubbed with distorted tone and acoustic. So that's pretty cool in a live situation to be able to do that.
A technical wizardry.
Yeah, wizardry. I like that.
Do all the PRSs come with two outputs?
No. It's the one they call P90, or P stands for piezo. So if you look at the website, there's like, you have the same model basically, but without the piezo system. So you call, like a custom 24 would be P24.
I found that one. The PRS guitars were always out of my price range, but I've never heard anybody complain about the quality of those guys.
Well, the cool thing that they have this mid-price range now called the S2s that are also made in Maryland. But okay. They're not as fancy, and those are more affordable. It's like half the price. Still, and then you have the ones done in, was it South Korea, I believe, maybe? Mm. That are even more that's, you know, we did our signatures before, and those were made by, they're called the SE models.
Does Michael still use the Opeth guitar with the big O on stage?
No, that was one of his signature, and I got to do one, but I didn't use the O. I had it, it's my name on the headstock, but we, they're in the rehearsal room. They're great guitars and very price-worthy, but they don't do them anymore, and I think they sold out, so maybe that's, it's a bit of a collector's item now, perhaps. But since we, as I mentioned, started with the piezo pickups, we kind of obliged to use only guitars with that setup. And therefore, we don't bring the signatures on the road anymore.
One last question regarding guitars, and then I believe I took enough time from you. Within the catalog of instruments that you've used over the years for the Opeth albums, was there one guitar that left your possession that you regret giving away?
Good question. I might have had an Explorer white one that I had that I sold that I kind of regret. Mm-hmm. That was so long ago, I can't remember. No, I think all the guitars I used on the Opeth albums I still have so far. I don't like selling guitars. I sold some that I didn't need anymore, but I have too many guitars. At some point, I need to sell some.
I know that problem very well, having too many guitars.
Yeah, it's not super appreciated by other family members. Maybe you know what I mean.
Yes. Oh my God, why are you still buying guitars? We don't have space anymore. All the walls are filled up with guitars.
If you have the possibility, it's so in some to some point, it's better than investing in the stock market, I guess.
That's true. If you got an eye for the right guitars that will be stable in value. But my problem isn't buying guitars and selling them later. My problem is buying guitars and keeping them, and not getting the value back at any time.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the same. I mean, I'm a bit spoiled because I'm endorsed. So we get these fantastic guitars from PRS. And so that's, I have to pinch my arm, and it's amazing, you know, you get that.
That's something every artist aspires to. And you guys out there, you got something to aspire to the next time, and that's being nice to your loved ones and not ending up like the characters in the new Opeth album.
Yeah, exactly.
It's being released on the 22nd of November this year. You guys take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Take care of Frederick from Opeth. Also to the guy that owns the Explorer now that Frederick used to own. Give that thing back, you greedy demonic bastard. And most importantly, rock and roll.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Das war Pod of Rock, euer Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Und für Musik auf den Augen, werft doch einen akustisch formulierten Blick auf emp.de. Mit dem Code PODOFROCK erhaltet ihr satte Rabatte auf eure EMP-Bestellung und unterstützt so unseren Podcast.